You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What's up, everyone? The Love, The Jam, The Podcast, coming to you, as always, with Rob. How you doing, Rob?
I'm doing pretty well. The Clippers had themselves a very good week. How are you doing?
I am also doing well. Did you actually manage to hear that Chris Paul, J.J. Redick podcast?
I haven't yet. I read all about it on Twitter, of course, but I have not listened to it yet. Did you?
Yes, I actually did listen to it. There's actually a bit in it where Chris Paul talks about, I don't know if it was, maybe it was a conversation with Doc or maybe an old coach where somebody used to ask him, Chris, how are you doing? And he used to berate him for saying good. And then Chris would say, well, from now on. it was kind of a funny little nod. The Clippers are doing quite well. Yeah. Winners of quite a few games in a row, as it? Three in a row now the Clippers have won.
Four
in a row. They haven't lost a game so far in the month of March, I believe, which is, you know, not a huge thing, but kind of cool. They had a huge win against Oklahoma City Thunder, the wary Oklahoma City Thunder, 118-110. Mm-hmm. Just yesterday this game was. It was pretty fantastic. Yesterday from when we were recording this pod, a.k.a. Friday night. This was a pretty awesome game, particularly from the standpoint of Lou Williams and Danilo Gallinari and their offensive production. We were just bashing both these guys, not bashing, but talking about how we were worried both of them are slowing down and they're trying to maintain their legs and what we can do going forward, and just being altogether apprehensive like we normally are. And of course, they had that New York game. And then Gallo and Lou were both fantastic yesterday. Lou had 40 points mm-hmm. on 10 of 15 from the free throw line, which is kind of weird for him. 7 boards, 5 assists, 4 steals, 4 threes, 13 of 24 from the field. Gallo was 10 of 19 from the field for his 34 points. Felt like Gallo was doing a lot of things early, Lou doing a lot of things late. And those two were just absolutely massive, 74 points. Landry Shamet had 11, and Zubat had 14. Ivica Zubat had 14. But aside from that, those were the only people in double figures. And for a team very much known for its, you know, up and down the floor production, the Clippers still had a nice production for pretty much all of their big players. But really, it was all about Gallo and Lou. Just some quick thoughts on that game. I think we have a lot of room to talk about this game and a lot that spawned from it. What did you think about that game, Rob?
You know, it was a very nice win. I think just watching Lou and Gallo, especially Lou, dominate was really fun. There are, you know, the Thunder had played 5 games in 7 days. They were on the second night of a back-to-back. They'd played overtime the game before. Mm-hmm. Given the schedule and that the Clippers had been at home and had 3 days of rest, that's a game they really should have won. So I'm glad mm-hmm. they did. But it was just really fun. The Thunder have had a tendency to play in a ton of really fun games this season, and last night was certainly one of them. I had a blast watching it. It was one of the Clippers' more fun games in a while, I think. They've had probably more resounding wins and more important wins. But that was just one of their overall more solid victories in a few weeks, probably. It was great. It was great watching Pat Beverly defend Paul George and frustrate mm-hmm. the Thunder, watching Zubac battle Steven Adams, watching Gallo get buckets. It was a really fun, nice game. Not super important at this point in the season, I don't think. It's not like the Clippers are going to catch the Thunder. And at this point, they seem pretty certain to make the playoffs. But every win counts, and they're still in a race for playoff positioning. So definitely a good win, and I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, definitely a big win. I was super hyped. After being super frustrated with the team from that third quarter stretch when Paul George and Russell Westbrook both had 5 fouls, and seemed like the team had the opportunity to really shut the door on this game and on this team. But then the second unit for the Thunder kind of ran wild and brought the team back into the game, and was pretty frustrated. But at the same time, like, the Thunder are really good. They're really, really good defensive team. They're not a great shooting team particularly, but I feel like they have a really nice 8-man or so rotation where they need to cut things short a bit going forward. I really like the Morris pickup for them. So I was frustrated. I get easily frustrated with the Clippers. But at the same time, this is a really long defensive team, and when they're engaged, it can be really hard to score on them. Lou was the only one that had it going during that stretch. Yeah. And he came up huge. So a little bit of a controversial point from a lot of OKC's perspective was the fouls in this game and the fact that three of their starters fouled out. Paul George was not shy to talk about it down the stretch. And after this game, complained pretty verbally, some of the more public comments about just fouls in general.
And he was fine for it.
And he was fine for it. Of course he was. Did you have any really points to make?
There were some bad calls, I think, but there are always bad calls in NBA games. I really didn't think this game was particularly egregious. Westbrook and George have nobody to blame but themselves. Several of their fouls are just really stupid. You know, there were a couple questionable ones. I thought one of Paul George's offensive fouls against Beverly was kind of iffy. It was probably just a no call, maybe like a ticky-tack foul on Beverly. It didn't really seem like an offensive foul on George. But, you know, I hate the argument that people are like, don't foul, you know, guys out late in games on calls. There were a bunch of people just on Twitter, especially with the Paul George fouls, like, you can't just foul him out in that situation. And it's like, well, but that leads to idiotic games where you're calling stuff safe just because you don't want to foul star players out. That's so stupid. That takes away from the game. You need to call it how you'd regularly call it. So that point, I think, is ridiculous. And Paul George has so little room to complain. He gets a lot of foul calls himself. He shot 20 free throws the night before. And his defense is really physical, and he fouls and grabs and pushes guys a lot. You know, Pat Beverly does that. But Pat Beverly also gets called for a lot of fouls. Paul George is no different. So I thought coming from George, that was pretty egregious. You know, I was not inclined to really follow that. The Thunder lost that game on their own. They shot horribly. Schroeder was absolutely atrocious. Adams didn't have much of an impact. The Clippers, I think, outplayed them. They got some help from fouls, but the Thunder caused a lot of their own problems. So, you know, I generally try to avoid blaming the referees. Every once in a while, there are games where I think they really do have an impact. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I joke about it on Twitter sometimes, especially regarding the Lakers. But the refs are human. Sometimes they make bad calls. It is what it is. It's part of the game.
Yeah, and honestly, I didn't find the Thunder hyper-aggressive. It's not like they should have had more free throws, particularly. They jacked up a lot of threes in this game. I don't see the argument that, well, look at their free throws and look at our free throws. OKC was clearly tired. You could see it, particularly at the end of the first half, that they just had dead legs and they were just trying to get through this game. They had a little bit of a burst in that third to fourth quarter where they picked things up. And when Westbrook and George came back, they were fresher. But the Thunder were, like, attacking the rim relentlessly or anything like that. So I don't really buy it. You know, I think the Clippers got more calls because, you know, they were, you know, as cliche as it is to say, but they were a bit more aggressive and they got some of those calls. So I don't have too much more to say about that. I do have something to say about, the Thunder had a stretch in the fourth quarter where they only went up one, where they missed like five easy shots, like mid-range shots. Westbrook missed shots. I think George had an open three. They were tired. They didn't hit the shots that they needed to hit, and they had opportunities to hit them. So I don't either. Sorry, Thunder fans. But you guys have a really nice team, but I don't have sympathy for you in that sense. Sympathy I have for is maybe for Ivica Zubac. I think it's becoming a more and more interesting idea. Montrezl Harrell, who's been obviously amazing for many, many months for the Clippers. But pretty much since that Mavericks game where he just destroyed the Mavs, has kind of been up and down. This is not a great matchup for him. A team that's just super, super long with athletes like Adams and Nerlens Noel manning the middle. You could really see Trez's limitations against those bigger bodies. Yep. And Zubat was just fantastic, just manning the middle, catching pick and roll opportunities, or even just picking up as the last guy, last line of offense, and having dunks on one end. I thought Zubat was great, and I think we both kind of agree we probably would have gone with Zubat down the stretch. I don't know if Doc is at that point with Zubat yet that he would play him down the stretch. But so what do you think about this whole Zubat versus Trez debate?
It's interesting. I was firmly on he should have played Zoo yesterday. I thought the same in the Kings game, and Trez had some big plays down the stretch to help him win that. I thought the exact same thing. I thought Zoo is just a better rim protector. It's not even close. I think Trez is probably better switching out on the perimeter, but the Clippers don't do that very much. Generally, their bigs drop back in defense, and I think Zoo is both smarter about when to rotate. He's just a bigger presence. He's a stouter presence. And in games when they really need stops more than they need offense, which I think was very true yesterday, when you have Gallo and Lou cooking, it just makes sense to have Zoo out there. Similarly, if Trez is having a tough time with bigger bodies like Adams or Noel, it's not a slight on him to take him out for a guy who just matches up better. I agree. I think a lot of fans are super critical about this. And, you know, I might have been if they'd lost. But at the same time, Zoo still hasn't been on the team very long. He's very young. And there are plenty of times when he makes pretty dumb mistakes himself. So I understand where Doc is coming from. Mm-hmm. Trez has been one of their best players all season. He wants to reward him. He wants to, you know, put trust in him. You know, you ride your horses down the end of these games. But I think there are times when he should legitimately close the Zoo. I think it makes sense in some matchups. I think the Thunder is certainly one of them where just especially Noel just gave Trez absolute fits. He just could not finish over him. He couldn't see the basket.
Yeah.
And Zoo is a better rebounder too, which is something that's played the Clippers all season is getting rebounds. And Zoo's a much better rebounder. So I think there are plenty of arguments to make he should close, but like most players, it's a game-by-game decision. Mm-hmm. Only two players. I joke sometimes about Gallinari not closing. But, I mean, he has to close, basically, unless he's having just an abominably awful night. But really, the only two guys who need to be out there at the end of games are Lou and Gallo. I'd say Pat Beverly is a very close third.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, I mean, I think the other two or three star players can kind of rotate. Trez, certainly, I don't think is a must close every night. I think the Shea Shamit thing, sometimes one of them can, sometimes one of them can't. Gallo, Lou, and, you know, kind of Beverly are the only locks, I think. But, I mean, what did you think about that? I understand where Doc is coming from, but it might cost the Clippers a game or two if he just keeps riding with Trez on nights when it's not his night.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a bit situational. I would have played Zubat on the stretch also against the Kings, but of course, Trez came up huge, especially if you're running Lou, Will, and Gallo pick and roll, pick and pop. Like, what is what is Trez even have advantageously over?
Yeah.
You know, but I guess, you know, you're not going to be running that often, and still that your Lou and Trez pick and roll is still going to be a bit of your centerpiece, even as a decoy, I suppose. But if you're not running him in a pick and roll situation, and he had one pick and roll Trez did where he just couldn't finish at the rim, which is not Trez-like. But when I saw that, I'm like, dude, just put in Zubat. Like, why are we even doing this right now? But things worked out. So
yeah, they ended up winning. So it's tough to complain.
Right. Trez was a -6 and Zubat was a +14. Speaking of a minus plus minus, Garrett Temple was a team low -16 in just 17 and a half minutes or so. He's kind of been playing fairly poorly. Temple was a guy I was really looking forward. Both of us were really looking forward to being a Clipper. Just a nice utility type of player. hasn't really been capitalizing in ways we thought. Even though he's not really a stats type of guy, he's felt kind of invisible recently. And now with guys like Wilson Chandler, Lukumba Moute returning, is Temple really the short straw right now? Maybe Temple and maybe Ty. Yeah. What do you think right now as far as the rotation and the end of the rotation, considering those two seem imminent? Though who knows, man? Seriously.
Yeah, with Luke, I have no idea. Uh-huh. I mean, it's interesting to note that Wilson Chandler was available yesterday and did not play at all. And Doc went deep into the bench, and Darius Thornwell got some minutes, and Chandler didn't, which really surprised me. Right. So it's possible they might be available and still not play there because they're getting up to speed, or just because Doc doesn't quite trust them yet. I'm not sure. I mean, I wrote on Friday that I didn't think either of them really deserve big roles in the rotation going forward. I think the easiest case to make for either of them is Luke over Temple as the small forward, the bench lineup, because he does a lot of what Temple does, except better. He's a better defender. He's a more versatile and bigger defender, which is something the Clippers need. But Temple does offer some things that Luke doesn't, namely a little bit of ball handling, a little bit of playmaking,
right,
and slightly better just creation. Like, if you really need to, you can give him the ball with like 6 seconds left on the clock, and he'll be able to get some sort of look off. It probably won't be great, but he can get it off. Luke is not like that at all. So I understand the pros of playing Luke, but I think there are some things that Temple does that are valuable. I agree, he has not been very good in most of these games. I think his defense has mostly been pretty good.
Yeah. But
offense, basically invisible. He could just need time to fit in with Lou and Trez and the rest of the Clippers bench. It's possible. I mean, Green has fit in much better, but he's also had a much easier role in just standing out and hitting threes, basically. So I wouldn't be quite so quick to pull the plug on Temple, but for Luke, I understand. Chandler, I don't see where he fits in, because even more than Luke, he's really not a small forward anymore. He's really a power forward, and you're not obviously benching Gallo. You're not benching Green, even though he was also really bad yesterday, I thought. Or not bad, just he didn't
do anything. Yeah.
Completely invisible.
Right.
But I think he's still, on the whole, better than Chandler, and he fits the Clippers' needs better. Mm-hmm. So I don't see a role for Wilson Chandler. Like, I really don't. I know he's a veteran. He's been in the league a long time. He's mostly been a starter for his career.
Some nice irony for Clipper fans, too.
Yeah, I mean, Clippers fans pined after him for years in the Lob City era as a small forward who they thought would be a perfect guy to start with the Lob City, the core four, and he probably would have been. But now he's older and he's a different position, and the Clippers I just don't think they really have a need for him. I wouldn't mind him getting a shot over Temple if Luke still isn't healthy and Temple continues to kind of struggle on the offensive end, but that's certainly a downgrade defensively.
Right.
And the Clippers do need defense. So, yeah, I mean, I think Temple is probably the guy to go. We're both Ty Wallace fans. His offense, too, has not been very good at all this season. But the one he does do, even more than his defense, is that he pushes the pace relentlessly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that really helps the Clippers. Even when he doesn't convert, just it's the kind of game I think they need to play more often. And it plays into strengths of other guys on the roster. So I do like that about him. And I think his defense is also really good. And more importantly, he's more than Temple even. He's another guy who can really bring the ball up and get offense into sets. He doesn't really get many assists. But he is a guy who can take a little bit of that pressure off of Lou. And if you bench him and still have Temple and then Luke or Chandler, that's a really big deficit in terms of ball handling. Basically, you're asking Lou to bring it up basically every possession. I mean, Temple theoretically could, but he's worse at that than Ty. So I think the real argument would be Luke over Temple. But even that, I'm a little hesitant about. I mean, what do you think? I mean, the real problem with Luke is he just hasn't played in 5 months.
Right.
And he's like 33 years old, you know.
Right.
I hope he does make it back, but I just have zero expectations for him this season. It wouldn't surprise me if he was available and just didn't play a lot.
Yeah, I mean, at this rate, I kind of have to see it. If Luke can come back and play a game similar to, you know, the game, couple of games he played, you know, 10 years ago when he last played for the Clippers, it feels like it's been forever. If he can play one of those games, then I probably would want him in there over Temple. Because I agree with you. I think Ty Wallace's ability to just kind of push the pace and be a secondary ball handler is important for this team. And I don't want to bench him. I think both of us are maybe, I wouldn't say biased, but we like Ty. I think he's one of the better players on the team. So I don't want to bench him outright. And I like Temple a lot too. I even thought he would be an interesting look as a de facto starter. Mm-hmm. But just the way he's playing right now, if he's doing mostly defending and shooting from three, and we have Ty Wallace, you know, helping Lou as a ball handler, it's tough because when you have Ty and Lou, it's nice to have Temple there as a third guy because Green and Trez aren't handling the ball at all. So it's really going to be just two ball handlers if you have Luke there instead. But it's like that's just like a pinch type situation where Temple would need to create something on the fly. And Luke is left open all the time anyway. So I don't know. It's kind of an interesting situation. It's crazy how healthy the team is right now, knock on wood, that we're in this situation where we have Luke and Chandler and we're like, man, maybe we don't even need to play these guys. Speaking of defenders, Patrick Beverley.
Yeah.
One of my friends is a big Oklahoma City Thunder fan, loves Russell Westbrook, loves him. And while he was kind of talking, kind of saying congrats on the win, all he was doing was talking about is how much he hates Pat Beverley, the free throws that the Thunder didn't get. And all I said was first team. I wish I could have been insinuating me holding my finger into his face, number one, because that's how I felt, man. Patrick Beverley has instilled so much dog into this team that it's absolutely incredible. He feels like, how are we possibly not going to have this guy on our team next season? He has been everything Clipper. He just gets more and more he just infuses his team more and more every game. What a leader this guy is. Plus 22. And often I don't read into plus minuses that much, but man, this guy was definitely a plus 22. Six assists, seven boards, 0 points. A lot will be made of this, but Patrick Beverley is probably the most positive plus minus kind of guy that can give you 0 points in the league. And his ability to infuse his team with his tenacity at the guard position, I feel like it's unlike any other player in the league. I feel like you see a lot of these kind of junkyard type players are either swing players maybe, or often they're bigs. You know, Draymond Green, even Kevin Garnett of days of yore. Oh, gosh. you know, can be your examples for that. But Patrick Beverley being often the smallest guy on the court and infusing the team with this much tenacity and energy and him and Trez, are there words left to say about Pat? Is this guy, we have to bring this guy back, right?
Yeah, they have to, I think. Barring him getting a ridiculous offer from some other team, which I don't think will happen due to his age and just skill set not being the flashiest, I think the Clippers have to find a way to bring him back. Probably their top priority, really, after getting a superstar free agent is bringing him back. I think he likes the city. He likes the team. I think he'd love to come back on a reasonable deal. So hopefully they get that done. But yeah, his ability to get offensive rebounds, considering his size and his lack of real hops. I mean, he can probably dunk, but just barely. But he is able to sky for rebounds.
Yeah, geez.
And he has such great instincts. And I think I talked about this on the radio last week with Adam on AM570. But right. He just doesn't turn the ball over either. And he's not quite like Lou in that he doesn't have the ball in his hands a ton. He's not looking to create a lot. But he's been at probably 5 or 6 assists per game over the past couple months. And it just never seems like he turns the ball over. And when he does, it's usually not a bad one. You know, insofar as some turnovers are worse than others, he doesn't really give live ball turnovers away that lead to easy layups or dunks or whatever. And so many times he just has 5 or 6 assists, 1 turnover, or 0 turnovers. And that's such a crucial thing for this Clippers team because they're a horrible team defending in transition. And, yeah, it's just amazing. He missed all 3 of his 3s last night, but he's been a great 3-point shooter, too.
Right, he's been so great, yeah.
Yeah, he's just been phenomenal. I think one of the funniest things is Sixers fans wailing about how, like, oh, we didn't get Pat Beverly in the trade. We should have demanded Pat Beverly. It's like, well, if you wanted Pat Beverly, you'd have had to have given up a bunch of other assets to get him.
Right. Like, seriously.
He's really good. He's the biggest leader on this team. And, I'm basically out of words to say about him. I don't think we really even need to talk about Lou either, to be honest.
Oh, yeah.
At this point, like, he's sixth man of the year. He should win every award.
Seriously.
They need to create just, like, coolest NBA player award. Just, like, give it to Lou one time. I think one thing we did both want to say, Gallo was incredible. But we're always as critical of Gallo. And it's funny, like, every time I tweet something negatively about Gallinari on the Clips Nation account, he does something amazing, like, within the next minute. I just need to talk shit about him all the time. But
yeah, do it.
He really does just kind of screw up the pace of the team sometimes and the flow of the offense. People criticize Lou for having the ball and dribbling a lot, but it's very different than Gallo, because Gallo just stands there and holds it and
Right. Then
pump fakes and then gets into the post and then dribbles back. Like, there are possessions when he has the ball and stands for 10 to 12 seconds and just doesn't do anything.
Right.
More than Lou, I'd say, though. And that's entirely just hypothetical and apocryphal evidence. But it can be very frustrating. And there are times when it really upsets the offensive rhythm of the team. So as good as he was against the Lakers, too, he does that sometimes. And it's just so irritating. We were texting about this. And they just need to find some way to stop him from doing that, because unless he has a mismatch in the post, it's just not great offense to give him the ball against like Paul George or Jeremy Grant and just be like, hey, create something with your back to the back. It's just not going to work.
Or Josh Hart or like any of these guys. Seriously.
Yeah, it's not good offense and it's frustrating. Yeah. Well, and what do you think about Gallo, though? I mean, on the whole, he's been fantastic this season. He's been mostly healthy. He was great yesterday. But, I mean, is there anything they can try to do to get him to play within the offense a little bit more? Because one of the reasons why he was cooking in that first quarter is he was just letting things come to him.
Yeah, Gallo's phenomenal all season, obviously. It almost, and I didn't think about this until now, him in the post against even a slightly smaller guy almost kind of reminds me of, like, giving the ball to Jamal Crawford on, like, the wing or something and just letting him dribble and like and take a, you know, a bad shot. Not to compare Gallo totally to Jamal, but it's just like he goes in the post, he gets his position, he dribbles and he often just kind of, and whatever Paul George complains about he, I think Westbrook might have said in a quote that a lot of those guys are playing for fouls, and you can say that about Gallo a bit. When he gets the ball in a post, he often is just playing for a foul. In fact, the one time he scored down low, and he there was some contact, he complained about the he scored and he just complained about the contact all the way down the floor. He made kind of a big thing to complain about the ref about it. He's usually not much of a complainer, but Gallo definitely was playing for fouls, and it's a habit he tends to do. I remember I was talking to a buddy about just what's the most effective play for us to run down the stretch, and it's easily a Lou Williams pick and roll with either Trez or maybe even Gallo, which is what happened last night. Just because Lou is getting things going. If he runs a pick and roll, there are options. He either gets a mid-range shot or he gets a pocket pass to Trez or somebody comes over and he can get something to maybe Shamit. Somebody cheats off a Shamit or one of the shooters. There are so many options. It's in the flow of the offense still. It's not just like an ISO Gallo ball where he's in the post, he does some pump fakes, and often he's just trying to shoot a shot in semi-traffic, or even he gets to the rim where Gallo isn't the best finisher, to be honest, and you would much rather see Trez, even Trez last night at the rim, or Lou at mid-range wide open, or even Gallo wide open mid-range yesterday, which he did. He did this nice little step back into that angle mid-ranger, which was a great shot. You know, that's the kind of shot that you want from Gallo in the midst of the offense, because it's frustrating because he can do it. But often I think we feel like when we're in a pinch that we can just give it to Gallo in the post and let him run things. And, of course, it won't burn out Lou if you give Gallo some of those post ISO moments. And I guess sometimes you might sort of need it just because you can't just run Lou to death, you know? But it's not the most efficient offense, and it's really infuriating when you see Gallo make some quick moves, like a quick little step back in his rhythm, which is a much better shot than like dribble, dribble, post up, turn, 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 shoot a shot in traffic. You know, if that's just a low percentage shot. So I love Gallo, but this Gallo ball is probably the most out of rhythm thing that the Clippers do. Yep. And it just kind of ices the team. It's insane the idea that we ever thought Gallo and Blake Griffin could have ever worked together.
That's one of the weird, like, I think that's probably one of the biggest reasons why he's been so good this season compared to last season. I mean, obviously, health is the biggest thing. But he and Blake were just such an atrocious fit together.
Right.
For so many reasons. Like, they like to play in the same spots. They have, in some ways, a very similar style in terms of holding the ball and just kind of jib-jabbing and, you know, all that kind of – And especially as Blake has developed more of a three, like, they're very similar players. I mean, Blake is obviously much, much better. Mm-hmm. But in terms of offensive, how they play, it's very similar. So, yeah, it's – and obviously Gallo's position is at the four now. So, you know, I would have liked to have seen last season's team healthy and, you know, really get them a chance to play together with Blake, DJ, Gallo, Beverly, all of them. But – it's probably for the best that what happened.
Right. I agree with that wholeheartedly. And don't worry, guys, we're not forgetting the Clippers beat the Los Angeles Lakers 113-105. So I didn't think I would be that happy about this game. Both of us downplayed even the Clippers winning this game because we both have a healthy amount of respect for LeBron James, as we should. But the Clippers won this game fairly easily.
Yep.
They were up the whole game. They won pretty much every quarter after falling behind a bit in the first, and it was not really that much of a contest. Gallo was great, 9 of 15 from the field, 23 points. Trez, Lou, everyone really shot well, which is not surprising against a terrible, terrible Laker team. Beverly was fantastic. Just everyone played well. Zubat actually was only 7-4. I thought he actually played.
He wasn't that great.
I felt like he felt some nerves. He missed some passes, and I felt like he was probably a little bit nervous. I also hope Zubat's free throws pick up a bit. I know they're super flat, but he's been shooting them really well, and it kind of surprises me what a good free throw shooter he was with the Lakers. Maybe he's just kind of regressing to the mean a bit, but he's been missing some of his free throws. It would be nice if he had an 80%er from at center. I'm not so certain Zubat can kind of keep that up. But anyways, that was a fun game against the Lakers. The Lakers are a bad team, man.
They're really bad.
They're bad.
They're destroyed by injuries at this point, but they're really bad. I mean, I think in the moment, the game felt very momentous. It was like, you know, there was this big game. It was a hype game. The Lakers needed to win it to make the playoffs, and the Clippers just dominated them from start to finish. During the game, it was like, wow, this is really happening. The Clippers are burying the Lakers. This is such a, you know, not ironic. It was just such a great moment for Clippers fans. But at the same time, like, the Lakers were just really bad. They're just bad. They're a bad team. And beating a bad team in a game that's, you know, technically on the road slash with a lot of opposing fans – but it's still at Staples Center. So they're basically at home and, you know, against a much worse team. And it was a game they should have won and needed to win. I think we were both worried about it just because of LeBron. And LeBron got his, but the rest of that team is just atrocious. And Kuzma got injured in the fourth quarter. Ingram didn't even play. They're just a disaster right now. Ingram is out for the year. Ball is out for the year. LeBron is getting rest and not playing back-to-backs. It's, you know, they might not win three games the rest of the season.
Yeesh.
A worse record than, like, the Orlando Magic at this point.
Yeesh.
Yeah, so it felt really big right after the game and during the game, but looking back at it, you know, 5 days later, it's like, what is there to even get that excited about?
I was really excited. I couldn't sleep. I was talking to my boys about it. Everybody was very hyped. I mean, like, how could you not be excited? The Clippers beating the Lakers is still fun, and they still have LeBron James. But yeah, unfortunately, that's just a bad team. Some really terrible, terrible front office moves. They should clean house a bit, man. They won't, because Lakers and rings culture. But Luke Walton's going to get canned, and he shouldn't. Oh, whatever. The Lakers suck.
I mean, I think he's been pretty bad this season, but I mean, he's still a scapegoat.
Right.
Pelinka and Magic did a way worse job building a roster than Walton has coaching it. I mean, they both deserve to get fired.
Really bad, but they won't. But
no, especially Magic. But
yeah, Magic. I guess you can't fire Magic Johnson from the Lakers. No. But that
they won't get fired either.
Yeah, he won't. So the Lakers are a bad team. So while I'm excited, and you know, the Lakers were, you know, the Lakers came back a bit. Gallo hit a huge straightaway three that stopped with some Laker momentum, and they cut the game. I want to say the score was maybe 99-94. LeBron had a drive to the rim where he got he had an and one, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And then Gallo hit a huge three-pointer, and then just from there, Shamet shut the door. Shamet's been a nice addition to this team. I feel like he's been kind of quiet, but he's been in double figures these past few games. Really love his secondary passing, his secondary just ball handling. Even if he doesn't get, you know, a bunch of assists or anything, he looks like a pretty capable dribbler and just playmaker, much more than JJ Redick ever has been.
Yeah.
I hate comparing him all the time to JJ, but it's just inescapable. That's been really nice. I don't think there's much to say about Shamet outside of the fact that he's just such a nice player to have on this team. Even just the defense that he caters, like, people have to guard him all the time. It's just so night and day compared to freaking Avery Bradley, who is, you know, apparently LeBron James in Memphis, but whatever. Yeah, it's he's been a nice player, just a really nice addition. Hopefully a guy we can just keep for a very, very long time. So this Laker game was fun. It was nice to see the Lakers suck some more, and the Clippers,
that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I like when they're bad, I won't lie. They might be bad enough that they'll land a decent lottery pick this year, who knows. But that's about all I need to say about that game. Do you really want to talk about that Knicks game at all? Shamet, yeah, of course, again, had six threes in the first quarter. Cool. That was awesome. That was just a fun game. They blew out the Knicks in that first half pretty badly, and they played a bit lackadaisically in the second half, but it's hard to really blame them. It's the Knicks.
Yeah, I mean, it was frustrating to watch.
Yeah.
But you can't blame them. They're up like 40 points against a really shitty team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they got lazy and they didn't try very hard, and it didn't end up mattering because the Knicks were that shitty. So, yeah, I have nothing to say. Watching Shamet hit all those threes is incredible.
Yeah.
He's a really special shooter. I think that much is already pretty obvious. But, yeah, I don't really have much else to say. Do you want to look ahead a little bit at the schedule before we take some Twitter questions?
Yeah, definitely. So let's look at the next few games. Next up would be the Celtics on Monday. The Celtics played today. They won in Los Angeles already against the Lakers, who we just told everyone is a shitty, shitty team. So we're going to be playing them on Monday. Next after that will be the Blazers on a second game of a back-to-back. The Blazers will have some rest. The Clippers will not. The Clippers are actually catching a lot of teams on less rest these last few games, especially that OKC game. The Clippers have had the weekend off, so they'll have rest that game. Then they play a crappy Bulls team on Friday, and then they play a decent Nets team on the following Sunday. We might come back either Saturday or Sunday, who knows.
Yeah.
But we can talk about all four of those games. What do you think for those four? Are you feeling maybe a 3-1? 2-2.
I think you've been lowballing them the past couple weeks. I think last week was 1-2, and they went 3-0.
Right.
Chicago has not been bad since they got Otto Porter for garbage and Bobby Portis and
Jabari
Parker. Mm-hmm. I love the Wizards so much. they're just the most incompetent organization right now.
I mean, when you can play Jeff Green so many minutes instead of your future when you're tanking, you have to play Jeff Green, you know?
They lost in overtime today to the Wolves. I watched like the last like 10 minutes of that game. Jeff Green played like 40 minutes at power forward and had five rebounds, I think. He might have had five or three. I don't know. Ariza, I think, played more and had three rebounds. So, you know, they're both like 35. And
did you enjoy watching future Sixth Man Derrick Rose, Sixth Man of the Year?
God, I hate him so much.
I hate him with a passion.
Yeah, he is my least favorite NBA player right now, and has been for years, ever since, you know, the whole
awful person thing.
Yeah, since the whole awful person thing.
Yeah, that's something that you can maybe keep in mind.
Yeah, and nobody ever seems to mention, except when people on Twitter make us think about it. And I also just think he's really awful to watch. Like, he hit some huge shots today against the Wizards, to give him credit, but they were all just these contested mid-range twos. Like, he was just dribbling around and then taking, you know, 18 footers with hands in his face, and like, he made them, but they were horrible shots. You know, he wasn't getting free. It's just awful. But anyway, the Bulls are not bad with Porter, but, you know, they're still trying to lose games. The Clippers will be at home with rest. That's a game they need to win. Brooklyn is feisty, but, like, you know, that is also a game the Clippers should win. I think they can beat one of Portland or Boston. So I'm going to say they go 3-1. I don't know which game it is. I would tend to say, you know, even though it's the second night of a back-to-back, I think they probably have a better chance against Portland, because I think Boston will be coming out for revenge after they blew a 28-point lead to the Clippers like a few weeks ago. I think they go 3-1, but I would honestly be fine. As long as they get two of these wins, we'll be sitting pretty well.
Yep, and they have a couple of games against the Pacers at home, against the Cavaliers on the road, and then they have that East Coast road trip. So really, these next two games are challenging, and then there's a lot of winnable games in the near future. So hopefully they can split those two. I don't know who they win. I probably would tend to agree that the Celtics might be feistier. I'm never afraid of the Blazers, ever. Like, ever. I don't know why. Even though we don't have Chris Paul to shut down Damian Lillard anymore, he just doesn't scare me. He should. He had 51 against the Thunder this the other day in a losing effort. But Damian Lillard, to me, I don't know why.
Damian Lillard scares me, but nobody else in the Blazers does. I think Dame is really, really, really good.
He is really good, but I don't know. I think I'm just used to Chris Paul shutting him down. Chris Paul owns
that's
him.
That's fair. So, that's fair.
Yeah.
I think they can beat the Blazers. I mean, I think we discussed this last week, and I think there are a couple of questions about this, but the Blazers are like the one Western Conference team there's even a remote chance they play that I think they could legitimately beat in a playoff series.
Oh, I would love to get the Blazers, please.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
I think, you know, as long as they go 2-2, it doesn't matter really which games they win. I mean, the Chicago game in particular, like, they just need to beat the Bulls. But as long as they go 2-2, I think that puts them in very good position to really secure that playoff spot. That gives them 40 wins. They have more easy wins coming up. You know, that Lakers game that was, you know, the third to last game of the season, that could have been a really tough game, now it's going to be an absolute joke.
Right.
Ball, Ingram, I guess LeBron is probably out for that game too. Though it is at home, they might want to play him. And that will be now an easy game. The Grizzlies game should be an easy win. They have two Cavs games left. I mean, I think as long as, if they get two wins this week, that's perfectly fine. Three would be even better, because as we're going to discuss again, I think there are some questions about this. But, you know, they want to get the 7 seed.
Right.
Warriors.
Yeah, and the Warriors just beat the Nuggets again. So it's looking more and more like the Warriors are going to be that 1 seed. So we definitely want that 7 seed. Yep.
Yeah. No, I think that's it. I mean, I think we're ready for questions. We have a bunch of them. Mm-hmm. So let's try to – I just need to scroll through my timeline here just to see them all. Mm-hmm. The very first question, like I was mentioning, is from at Omar Ibra 16, preferred first-round matchup aside from just avoiding Golden State. I mean, I think literally the preferred one is of anything but Golden State.
Yeah.
So
Blazers, Nuggets, and
of any semi-realistic team, I think it has to be the Blazers. After that, the Nuggets, I think, like, they're young and inexperienced, but Jokic and Millsap just murder the Clippers.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say Blazers, then Nuggets, then probably Thunder, then Rockets, then Warriors, and I think Rockets would be really fun, honestly.
It would be.
And the Clippers actually don't match up too horribly against them, but Capella's kind of a bad matchup. I mean, I just don't want to play Harden. Like, you know, even with his playoff, you know, what he's done the past two seasons of kind of shitting the bed, he's still having one of the most ridiculous seasons like of all time. I don't want any part of him.
I think I would be the most satisfied beating the Rockets of any first true. Round. Of course, the Warriors would be absolutely amazing, but
that's not happening.
Yeah. But if we beat the Rockets, I can't imagine, man. Can you imagine the hate pieces that would be on Chris Paul after losing to the Clippers in the first round?
I think there'd be even more about Harden, but yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It would be incredible. And the Rockets honestly might get second. They've won like 7 or 8 games in a row. They look amazing.
Oh, yeah, they're
and
really.
The Nuggets are kind of stumbling. But, I mean, you know, obviously if they come in on like winning 18 of their last 20 games or something, that doesn't bode well for the Clippers.
That would be delicious. They would obviously get wrecked. I think the Rockets would probably win like 4-1. But still, I think the Clippers could maybe win 2 games.
That would be a semi. The only series I think would be completely uncompetitive is the Warriors. I think they make a series of anything else. Yeah. Next question from at JWOP6. Should Chandler receive minutes, and if so, what lineup should he be integrated into? I already basically talked about this. I don't really think so. If any lineup, probably just the bench unit in place of Temple.
Yeah, as of right now, I think we both kind of agree that Luke seems to be a better fit over Chandler, and Chandler is kind of more of a 4 versus Luke and his defensive versatility, which is just a huge asset regardless of what lineups we have. Chandler practically, honestly, is almost like a Jeff Green type of player out there right now, and Green just provides us with more rebounding and more grit. So,
Jamichael Green.
Yeah, Jamichael Green. Jeff Green is actually who I'm talking about, so...
He is actually kind of similar to Jeff Green. I mean, I think
he's
better. He's a smarter player, but he is kind of Jeff Green-esque, and I have zero desire to watch Jeff Green play.
I remember when Jeff Green became a Clipper, and I watched a Grizzlies game, and I said somehow we traded a first rounder for Jay Green, and the Grizzlies still have a Jay Green that's better than ours.
Yep.
Jamichael, it was pretty sad. Anyways, next question.
Next question is from at Drummy_MSYG. The lineup and bench squad seem to be pretty set. However, in a playoff series, if Shea or Shamit needs to be replaced, who do you replace them with? This is tricky. I mean, I think the main benefit of making the playoffs outside of just making it to, you know, show off to free agents, like, look, we made it without an all-star, is to get Shea and Shamit playoff reps.
Yep.
You know, unless they're absolute disasters, like literally can't do anything right, are completely flustered, which I can't really see either of them doing, like possibly Shea in the wrong series, but I wouldn't bench them at all. I mean, they need minutes more than anybody.
Yeah.
So if, you know, to answer the question, I think possibly replace Shamit with maybe with Luke, if Luke is healthy. If not, then maybe Temple. I mean, the thing is, the Clippers really don't have a small forward.
Right, right.
So, I mean, Luke or Temple, I guess. Shea, I can't imagine them benching Shea, but...
Yeah, I mean, it would probably be Shamit with... I could see maybe Temple just to get his defense in for, you know, and sacrifice Shamit's offense. And I could see that, but I really want Shamit. I can maybe see Shamit going cold, just like any shooter would go cold, but I don't know who's going to put the clamps on him particularly. Then again, I never thought Joe Ingles would put the clamps on JJ Redick, but he did. So I don't know. I just feel like, I don't think there's some enough dominance in the West aside from the Warriors, I think somebody would just completely rattle our rookies. I don't know about that. Maybe the speed and the athleticism of the Nuggets would tire them out a bit, but it would be a good experience for them, honestly. Kind of a side question I wanted to ask you. So I think we all agreed before the trade that the second unit would destroy our first unit. Before the midseason, all those trades. But now, let's say you're playing a game of 21. What would the score be between the starters versus the bench in a game of 21?
That's interesting, because you have Pat Beverly guarding Lou.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still think the bench probably takes it.
Probably, but it'd be pretty close, right?
Pretty close. That would be a great game to watch.
Yeah, right. That would be a great scrimmage in like at the Forum or something. Yeah. Anyways, yeah. it's good to see the starters kind of picking up a bit and getting close. They've actually been the recently, it feels like the starters have been the ones getting us in leads, and the bench has actually been coughing up some of these leads, especially that last game. Yeah. So it's been nice to see. Next question.
Okay, next question. At Love Clippers 1. What's the probability the Clippers win a title next year if they keep the team intact and get a max superstar too? So if they get one superstar, they would be able to keep the team intact. If they get two, they won't. So I'm assuming if they keep the team intact and get a max superstar, I'm going to say that superstar will be Kawhi Leonard. He is the most likely, and he's the only one I can see them just getting one of. Maybe Butler, but if you added Kawhi Leonard to this team and kept everybody else of importance in the rotation.
Man.
And they would be really good. I mean, I think
Raptors-ish.
A 55 win team, maybe. I mean, I think a lot of it would depend on like what happens to the Warriors. KD seems like he's leaving. If he leaves, Warriors obviously much weaker. But it really depends. So much happens in free agency and with trades now in the offseason that, you know, the Lakers, their front office is atrocious. But if they somehow get AD and make a swing for another, they could build another team. You know, I'd say pretty low. If they get Kawhi and keep the rest of the team intact, probability they win a title, like 5%. But a lot would depend on their young guys. Like, if they bring Shea, Shamit, Zoo, and let's just throw Jerome in their back, and one of those guys makes a big leap, I'd assume probably Shea. You know, it's possible. I certainly wouldn't bet on it, even if they get Kawhi. If they get two superstars, then they'd have to overturn the roster a little bit more, which would put even more pressure on the young guys to make a leap. So it really depends. I'd say like 5 to 10%.
That's pretty good. If Durant leaves the Warriors, there's going to be a decent amount of parity in the league. Even if Durant and Kyrie go to the Knicks, that doesn't guarantee that they're a juggernaut or anything, you know. So it would be interesting. I don't think any team would have like more than like a 20%, maybe a 30% chance of winning a title. So having 5 to 10%, it's pretty good. I would love to see this team, just this team with Kawhi.
Yep, same.
It would be so much fun. It would be kind of probably a little Raptors-ish, and I like the Raptors a lot. So without the insane amount of length, man, the Raptors are a defensive.
They're good.
Jeez, you got Siakam, Ibaka, Kawhi.
I still don't understand why he'd leave the Raptors for basketball reasons.
Basketball reasons, it makes no sense.
It really doesn't. But I hope he does. I hope he goes to the Clippers. But yeah. Okay, we have a bunch more questions. So next one from my buddy Sean Woodley, who's a Raptors guy, actually. A wizard, let's call him Jeff Green, offers that the Clippers will finish ahead of the Lakers for each of the next 5 years, but will miss out on big free agents each of those 5 years as well. Do you accept Jeff Green's terms? I'll let you go first.
The Lakers suck, man. Wait, so the idea is that we finish with a better record than the Lakers, but miss out on free agents?
The Clippers finish ahead of the Lakers for 5 years in a row.
I'm not trying to beat the Lakers. I'm trying to get this team, because I'm guessing that the Lakers probably won't be very good if we don't land anybody, and we're just going to be the same kind of, you know, 45 to 48 win team.
I think that's the most likely. If this were to happen, that's the most likely scenario, which is the Lakers don't get anybody either, and they just continue not being very good, and the Clippers are just kind of better. But what happens if the Clippers don't get anybody, but all their young guys become awesome?
Sure.
And even if the Lakers are good, the Clippers are better. I think there's a sneaky upside to taking the other, that they just beat out the Lakers. Because if the Lakers get LeBron AD and win 50 games, but the Clippers are still better every season.
That'd be pretty amazing.
I honestly might take that. And I think it would be really cool to watch this team be really good, even without a superstar free agent.
That's true.
That's what this you know, front office is building towards. But
good point.
I think I would probably honestly take that, not just because, you know, screw the Lakers, but just because I think the Lakers at some point in the next 5 years will probably be pretty good. And if the Clippers are better than them, I'd take that. Next question from at Clip City 2. Would you replace Ty and Temple as the backup 2-3 with Jerome and Chandler? No.
No.
mostly because of Jerome. He's not ready for NBA rotation.
Jerome's not ready, but you know what? I see his tools. I see him that he can be like a scorer, I don't want to call him a Lou Williams type because that does a disjustice to Lou, honestly. But I see that he can handle the ball. He's probably more of a playmaker than we've seen on an NBA level. That's where he seems to be more comfortable in the G League. So maybe he can get reps and get that done and maybe eventually transition. He's not there yet. His confidence isn't there. And that's fine. It's not like it's easy to be amazing in the league. So I'm not completely lost on Jerome, but he's not a rotation player right now.
Yeah, I'm not writing him off. I just, like right now for this team, I would not do that swap.
Yeah.
Next question from at David A. Nagy 3. I love Shamit, but his defense is a big weakness. What are the chances he can significantly improve on that end of the floor in the coming years? I think there's a decent chance. I mean, I don't think he's ever going to be Kawhi Leonard, but he has decent size, especially if he's playing at shooting guard and not small forward.
Mm-hmm.
I think he can be at least okay. His instincts seem fine. I just think he needs more reps, better scouting reports on players, just, you know, bulking up a little bit. I think he can work his way up to, like, average, which would be a significant improvement.
You got to hide him on certain players. I thought Schroeder was a really nice guy for him to guard. Bullock in the Laker game, even though Bullock has so much height on him and length, he's like those kind of off the ball, you know, not Buddy Hield, obviously, but those kind of shooters that just kind of hang around. I think Shamit has a nice idea of where they go. Schroeder was perfect because he can't overpower him. And Shamit can move his feet, but the problem is, he's in so many small lineups that he'll just get overpowered by anybody he regards. There was a brief moment where Westbrook was being guarded by Shamit, I think, to end the first half last game. And you could tell Westbrook was exhausted because he just wasn't just drilling Shamit every time. I was like, oh, my God, we're guarding Russell Westbrook with Landry Shamit. We're going to get killed. But it actually ended up not being that bad. Though Westbrook did make some aggressive moves and take him easily, I think he did realize that Shamit was guarding him. The problem with Shamit is, you know, he has a very frail build, so he can't really take these bigger guards, but he shouldn't be guarding them in the first place. And two, I feel like he just doesn't know where he should be defensively a lot of the time, and he makes a lot of defensive breakdowns where he thinks he should lean one way and then he shouldn't, and then he gets either loses a guy completely or he gets blown by completely. And these are things you can work on. So when I watch him doing that, I don't think he's a lost cause. He's definitely really, really, really bad on defense right now. Don't get me wrong. But I feel like that he can get better. And I think he has the effort. He's not like he's just doesn't care out there like he's James Harden or something. He wants to get better. I can see him getting better. And, you know, he has some tools. He has long arms, so he's not quite Shea out there. But against smaller guards, he can maybe, you know, provide you. And the nice thing about Shea is that hopefully with Shea getting bigger, we can maybe play Shamit on some of these smaller guards and who are hopefully not speedy and just drive right past him. And we can switch Shea on a two or a three if he gets some more bulk to him. I love what Shea did, by the way, early on against Westbrook. It was just like such a heady defensive game. Kind of got the better of him in the first quarter. He got some fouls. But I thought he was just baiting Westbrook into a lot of bad possessions and knowing like this is what Westbrook does. And he was just so smart. I love the potential of Shea just defensively. He's such a...
Yeah, he's going to be an all-defense level player.
So good. Yeah.
So next question from at DJ Matic, is the sixth seed still not possible? It's not impossible, but it's pretty unlikely. The Jazz, the Clippers are basically tied in record with the Jazz, but I think the Jazz are the better team and they have the much easier schedule. So I think they get it. And I don't think any of the teams above them will drop that far. So it's not impossible, but I don't think it's likely.
Yeah, super unlikely.
Yeah. Next question from at Tony Prajwal. How much of a role did Lee Jenkins play in those documentary videos produced by the Clippers for Toby Gallo? Any other noticeable impact he has in the organization? I literally have zero idea.
I have no clue. Nobody does. Did you see the Gallo thing yet?
Yeah, it was good. I think that's what this guy is asked. I mean, I don't know what kind of role Jenkins had. I mean, it seems like the kind of thing he might have had a hand with, but I legit have no idea.
I have no clue. I thought that Jenkins, and I don't know this. This is a lot of, I think I heard him on the Woj pod a long time ago that maybe there's an idea that he's going to be able to present like free agents.
That's what it seems like.
Yeah. So if that's the case, and we really haven't seen what he's capable of just yet, and hopefully we will in the offseason. I think he's a great hire. I just don't know what's going on.
Exactly. next question from at JK Flores 157. Quick setup and a humble brag, but I was able to meet Trez in an autograph signing today. Do you guys have any favorite moments from meeting a Clips player in person? So this is actually interesting. I don't think I've ever met a Clippers player in person, except when I'm covering games. I don't think I've met one as when I went to games when I was just a fan or just anywhere else. So I don't really have any. And, you know, in terms of when I'm as a media member, you know, most of that stuff is stuff I can't really talk about. But let's just say that Pat Beverly is fun to listen to in the locker room.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
I haven't had, and this is something I need to get on. I've never even been like press credentialed in the locker room or anything just yet. So I don't want to say I've never even had an interaction with a Clipper player ever. I don't think I've gone to, of course, plenty of games, but I've never like met them up close. I've always had ideas that I would play Super Smash Brothers with Blake sometime, but it never happened, unfortunately. Maybe I'll do it with Shay. But I've never met any Clipper player, which is kind of unfortunate. I've had the closest thing to like an interaction I've had with a basketball player was when me it was actually Justin Russo, Fly By Night, shout out, former Clips Nation writer, went to a Mavericks game together. We passed by Sean Marion, and who was just so huge. This is when Marion was a Maverick. And we said like, good game, Sean, or something like that. And he passed us, and he looked at us, and I was like, oh, cool. And he's so massive. Like, I haven't really had many experiences with basketball, like NBA players up close. I wish I had something. The closest thing I've had, like, I met Bill Simmons, and I talked to him for like 5 minutes for his Book of Basketball tour. That's the closest to like a persona I've met, like, outside of.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really met that many NBA personalities either. I've seen a bunch of games, but I haven't really talked with them.
Yeah.
I guess my favorite interaction with a Clipper would just be shaking Boban's hand.
Oh, man, yeah. Time,
and just getting your hand swallowed. That was pretty fun. that's it for questions. I think we took a lot today. I think I don't really have much else to say. I think we went pretty in-depth on stuff. The Clippers are in a really good place right now. I don't really think we even need to do a standings watch. There are several games up on the Kings. They have the tiebreaker. Their schedule the remainder of the way is pretty easy. They look like they're in a really good rhythm right now. I think they're on like 538 in other sites. They're like at a 98-99% chance to make the playoffs, I think. So
the Kings are still winning a little bit more than I want them to win.
Right.
Yeah. They're 33-32, and they're still only, you know, three losses out. Granted, that's like four losses the Clippers have on them.
Yeah.
But still, I wish they would lose just a couple more games as much as I ultimately wish the Kings would make it over the Spurs, honestly. But I don't know if that'll happen either. The Spurs have been winning a lot of games too recently. So I am still a little bit nervous. I can't say for certain. I think Charles Barkley even recently doubled down and said that the Clippers still aren't going to make the playoffs. And I hate him for saying that, but it's still in the inner Clipper in me still has a lot of insecurities about whether or not we'll make the playoffs. It feels like we will, but I'm still a bit nervous. So we'll see. Hopefully those nerves get put to rest in the coming weeks. And I think that'll do it for this episode of the Lob the Jam, the podcast. For Rob, I'm Siobhan. Of course, you know, write all your nice things about us on iTunes or whatever you listen to us on. And as always, go Clippers!